CEOs, civic leaders, entertainers, and entrepreneurs, they all have something in common: the drive, vision, and heart to achieve success. Steve Klein is a renowned business consultant, author, and host of Playmakers Talk Show. Each week, he introduces you to another fascinating personality who will inspire, educate, and motivate you to persevere and find your own success. And now, here is Steve Klein.
Ralph Waldo Emerson said, "What you do speaks so loudly, I cannot hear what you say." Welcome to Playmakers Talk Show. I'm Steve Klein. In the studio today are two playmakers who do loudly. Our first playmaker is from Boyd, Texas, and became a naval officer. Well, our next playmaker is CEO of a 61-year-old Chamber of Commerce. With us today is the CEO of an organization that covers 121 counties and 96,000 square miles north Texas. Well, our next CEO was instrumental in the Wright Compromise and the LBJ Reconstruction. His great playmakers are T.D. Smyers. T.D. is CEO of the American Red Cross North Texas region. And Bruce Bradford. Bruce is CEO of the North Dallas Chamber of Commerce. And we're going to begin today's show with Bruce. Bruce Bradford, a Texas resident since fourth grade, is a native of Montana. In 2011, after a 30-year career in commercial banking, culminating in an executive role with a Texas-based regional bank, Bruce was named as the fourth president and CEO of the North Dallas Chamber of Commerce. Since the paving of Preston Road, the North Dallas Chamber of Commerce has continued to reinvent itself over its 61-year history to be relevant to the Dallas business community, to include the creation of the Dallas North Tollway in the 1960s and the Dallas Arboretum in the mid-70s. The North Dallas Chamber has led the process that resulted in the Wright Compromise at Love Field, the soon-to-be-completed LBJ Freeway reconstruction process, and completion of the Galleria Valley View area plan, which is also known as Dallas Midtown. Well, Bruce, welcome to Playmakers Talk Show.
Thanks, Steve. Glad to be here.
Well, as the CEO and with the North Dallas Chamber beginning in 1954 with, as I mentioned, the paving of Preston Road, give us a little additional background into the Chamber's history, because I know it's rather unique.
Well, I must say that I wasn't around in 1954, so I can't give the authorship of having been there. But what I understand is exactly what you described. There were visionary folks in Dallas, amongst them one Ebbie Halliday, who at 104 years old is still out there making things, great things happen. She and others that were involved in the real estate space saw the need for a little bit more attention on Dallas north of downtown. When you think of North Dallas, and certainly it's the context that we kind of frame our name in, North Dallas High School is just a couple of miles north of downtown. So, the timing of that and kind of the historical element of where North Dallas was back then, you and I were talking earlier about, you know, cotton fields and black loamy soil out there that is what North Dallas was, and look at what it has become over time. So the Chamber's taken an active role in that, again, beginning in 1954, with this idea that there needed to be more focus on some of the infrastructure. Preston Road was the immediate need, and I'm happy to say that today Preston Road is paved, ostensibly paved, all the way to Lake Texoma.
That's amazing how much has been done over the years because of the North Dallas Chamber. I want to come back to that and talk a little further about that, but you were very involved with the North Dallas Chamber prior to becoming president and CEO. You were a banker at the time.
Right.
What was the impetus that caused you to leave a 30-year banking career to run a Chamber of Commerce?
Well, it wasn't. There was not a direct tie between the two. I had an executive role with a Texas-based bank that was based in Houston. And we came to that proverbial fork in the road, and they decided that they would go one way, and I decided that I would go the other. I had a non-compete period for 1 year that kept me from going immediately back into the financial services. My predecessor at the Chamber, Steve Taylor, had an auto accident and a stroke. It was really the stroke that was kind of the precipitous illness that led him to not be able to continue to lead us. And while I was serving my non-compete, the Chamber was kind enough to come back to me. I'd served on the board for about 3 years while I was in that bank executive role. And came back to me and said, "We know you, and we'd like to have you consider sitting in the interim president chair." And I thought, this will be fun, and probably will go on for 4 or 5, maybe 6 months, while my non-compete expires and while the market gets a little bit better. This is kind of 2010, 2011, the financial markets weren't just exactly back on their feet yet. And so I said yes to that with no expectation that this is where I would be sitting 4+ years later. But it's a true joy, and I believe it to be a calling at this point in time. It you know, it really is something that I enjoy and get to link arms and take the collective hand of 61 years worth of history now, all the board members and board chairs that have led us so effectively, and take that one collected handprint and push it into the wet concrete of North Dallas, and that matters.
This chamber must be one of the most stable chambers in the North Texas area if you're the fourth CEO in 61 years.
Yeah, it's a rather remarkable situation at the chamber. Steve Taylor, again, my immediate predecessor, was in that chair for 25 years. And, you know, we do have a remarkable stand of longevity. I don't think that they're going to put up with me for me to be there 25 years. I just don't think I have that much oomph left in my career. But I do hope to be there in many, many more years, because we've still got very important work to accomplish.
Well, in the 25 years he was there, a lot has been done in North Texas. Matter of fact, what I'd like you to do, just hit a couple of areas, because we got the tollway, we have the Dallas Arboretum. I want you to end with the Dallas Midtown and what you're doing there. But talk about some of the things that the chamber has done over the years.
You know, I think, Steve, the biggest thing that we should be known for is the right compromise. It was October 14th of last year that all came to be, and now we get the opportunity to be out there and traveling easily from Dallas Love Field and not having to do the hop, skip, and jump that we often had to do before that. But there was an awful lot of work that went into that, as you can imagine. That process really began at our aviation conference in 2004 when Gary Kelly, who was at the podium leading the conference, pronounced that Southwest was no longer ambivalent about the Wright Amendment and that they were going to pursue change. And the right compromise is what came 10 years later. The chamber said that, you know, we're in the right spot geographically. Our relatively narrow focus at the time, which was almost singularly Dallas back then, was the right thing for us to take up. There were other organizations out there, but you know, many of them had geographic purviews that were much larger, and so it made a lot of sense for us to be that and take that role on. The other important historical elements of that are that we had two former board chairs that were very active in the aviation space or in the legislative space. Sam Coates, who is has had a wonderful career in aviation, including Braniff and Southwest, and now serves as, I believe, the incoming board chair at DFW International Airport, was one of our former board members who raised his hand and said, let's go make this happen. The other was, when she served us, was a local Dallas attorney, later Senator Kay Bailey Hutchison, former board chair, I believe 2 years removed from Sam. And the two of them, along with Steve Joyner, who is now with UNT, kind of set out to take the mantle and grab the ball and go out and talk to business organizations, talk to the local homeowner community around Dallas Love Field, and just take the message out there that this really needed to happen. So, you know, that process is one that I was not actively involved in, but I've read the testimony that Sam and Senator Hutchison gave before the Senate Subcommittee on Aviation, and I think that may have been 2006 or so. And, you know, Sam summed up the whole testimony period, which was probably a couple hours long, with saying, you know, that the chamber would like to see the Wright Amendment be significantly changed, with that alteration to be that the through ticketing go away immediately, the through ticketing issues go away immediately, a 2 to 5 year window to execute on the new process, and a reduction in the number of gates at Love Field. And, you know, 10 years after Gary stood at the podium and said that this is what he would love to see done, and this wasn't just all about Southwest. This was, you know, this is good for everybody, in my very strong opinion. We see Virgin America now taking advantage of the fact that they're there, and, you know, a couple of others that are able to be there in lease space and doing fine at the wonderful and beautiful new Dallas Love Field with its 20 gates. So, rather long talk on the right compromise, but that's a big part of our history and something that we look very proudly towards. But, you know, you mentioned other things, you know, certainly the Arboretum. That's a fact that I didn't know when I came to be in the chamber on its board, and really didn't know until I came on staff in 2011 that the chamber had any history with the Arboretum. But as I dug in and had conversations with Mary Brinegar, their executive director, president, CEO, and a couple of their board chairs that are common to us in being board chairs as well, we had a very strong action and responsibility in the early to mid-70s for seeing the process along. And, you know, wow, they've done a great job of taking that and building it to the amazing resource and attraction that it is for Dallas today.
Absolutely. It's amazing that from a committee of the Chamber of Commerce all the way to the federal government in 10 years, it happened. So if anybody says that the Chamber of Commerce doesn't do anything, just look back at the Wright Amendment. But in the last couple of minutes we have, talk about what's going on with Dallas Midtown.
Sure.
Because people are driving through LBJ. They look to the north, and there's these big buildings there. They're relatively empty. What's happening?
Yeah. Well, let me define the context first. So Midtown is a district that has been designated by the city of Dallas. It's known as the Valley View Area Plan. And it's a 400-plus acre box that is Dallas North Tollway on the west, LBJ Freeway on the south, Preston on the east, and then kind of an artificial line that is north of Alpha that runs across east to west. And that 400-plus acres, if you set aside the Galleria and, you know, a small handful of other office properties, there's really an awful lot of opportunity there for significant economic development. So it was former Dallas Council member Linda Koop that came to the chamber in April of 2011 to see Steve, my predecessor, and said, you know, I really think that this is a legacy opportunity for me as a council member and for the city of Dallas to really see a transformation and a significant impact on tax revenues over time. And so the chamber grabbed that ball and ran with it. Steve got sick. I came in and ran with it until that fall. And then it was a year later when the city gave the chamber an economic development grant to go out and hire the professionals that we needed to be able to get that done, that we took that. So that was approximately November of 2012 until May of 13 when city council approved the vision plan. And so what we will see coming out of that in the next 10, 15, 20 years will be exactly what you described there. It's an empty palette right now. A really creative opportunity, but we'll see significant verticalization. And because the city was very wise, in my estimation, in putting in zoning processes that are non-prescriptive, you know, you'll see high-rise living opportunities there. You'll see hotels, but you'll also see local retail. And you won't see much in the way of big box. I think very important to the conversation, what you won't see is a vast array of wide open parking. You're going to see buildings that are, you know, again, very vertical, and it'll be a dramatic change. You know, almost think about Midtown Manhattan when you think about what this will be. And then the crowning jewel will be a 20-plus acre park that will be the centerpiece of the whole development. It's approximately midway between the Galleria and the old Valley View Mall. And that is going to be the gathering place for North Dallas that Clyde Warren Park is for Uptown.
To do all this, the North Dallas Chamber of Commerce needs income from members. So tell everybody how they can join or check out the North Dallas Chamber of Commerce.
Steve, you know, those are the big picture things that we do. We've got lots of events. So, you know, we're a very typical chamber when it comes to that. I think we're atypical when it comes to the advocacy and leadership roles that we take on. But you can find us at ndcc.org, and there you'll see the array of events. Our fall season is very active. There'll be lots of opportunities for you to come and visit us and see what the chamber's all about.
Bruce, thank you very much for being a part of Playmakers Talk Show.
Thanks so much, Steve.
Bruce Bradford is president and CEO of the North Dallas Chamber of Commerce. Don't go away. We're going to talk to the CEO of the American Red Cross North Texas region. His name is T.D. Smyers. Back with T.D. right after this.
Their names are Vivian, Bryce, Zoe, and Joshua, ages 5 to 12. They are part of a very exclusive club that neither they nor their families want to belong. They've all been diagnosed with some form of pediatric cancer. Each year in DFW, hundreds of families hear the dreaded words, "Your child has cancer." Wipe Out Kids Cancer helps families cope and support researchers looking for a cure. Our mission is simple: to work relentlessly for the day when all children are living cancer-free. Learn more at wokc.org.
Operation Kindness is the oldest and largest no-kill animal shelter here in North Texas. Each day, its staff and volunteers care for an average of 300 homeless dogs and cats in its shelter in Carrollton, plus 100 more animals living in foster homes throughout the Metroplex. Learn how you can adopt, donate, or volunteer with this nonprofit group by visiting their website at operationkindness.org or by calling 972-418-7297. operationkindness.org.
And welcome back to Playmakers Talk Show. We're going to talk Red Cross this segment. We're going to talk to T.D. Smyers. He's the CEO of the American Red Cross North Texas Region. He leads a team of over 7,300 volunteers and employees. He was selected in 2012 as he made the transition from his career in the U.S. Navy. Now, the American Red Cross serves the Dallas-Fort Worth Metroplex, which includes 9.5 million people across 121 counties, spanning 96,000 square miles, including Denton, Weatherford, Cleburne, Corsicana, Terrell, Greenville, and McKinney areas, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. Now, upon graduating from the United States Naval Academy, TD became a naval flyer, earning his naval flight officer wings and embarking on a career hunting adversary submarines in the world's oceans. As squadron commander, he led combat air crews on counterterrorism missions in the Western Pacific and counter-narcotics missions in the Caribbean Sea. Well, TD, welcome to Playmakers Talk Show.
Thanks, Steve. It's good to be here.
Quite a background before you became CEO of the American Red Cross. But you began life in Boyd, Texas, northwest of the Metroplex. You drove a 68 GMC pickup, then became a naval officer. Why did you join the Navy?
Well, for me, the opportunity arose when I was looking into the military. I was always interested in serving, and I wanted to get into that in some way. And a friend, my very good friend, Mark, I was over at his house, and his brother was a football player and was being prospected by some teams, and one of them was the Air Force Academy, actually, and then that led to the other academy. So I did these catalogs for these schools, and I remember thumbing through them going, wow, I can go to school and get commissioned as an officer at the same time. And it was really intriguing. Started looking into it, talked to my high school counselor, got some support, applied, and actually got rejected the first time. And this is a story I love to tell youth that are out there pursuing their dreams. The Naval Academy sent me back, sorry, you're not qualified for the U.S. Naval Academy. And I looked at all my qualifications, and I was. I mean, my SAT scores in math were the minimum, but they weren't below the minimum. So I wrote them a letter back, and I said, I think you made a mistake. I think I'm qualified. And they sent me back a pre-candidate questionnaire. I filled it out. I got a nomination, and I became a midshipman at the Naval Academy. So it was a pretty wild ride.
Well, that proves that failure is quitting.
That's right.
And you didn't, and you became a naval officer.
Yeah.
Quite a story. And that how would you say that background in the U.S. Navy prepared you to run the American Red Cross here in North Texas?
Well, it's a great question, and I get asked that a lot. It's got to be so different, nonprofit and the military. And honestly, it's not. I mean, the American Red Cross is a very operational nonprofit. And it's about moving people and hardware where they're needed, where there's a mission. And so they're very similar. As a matter of fact, even some of the acronyms are the same. When I first came in, they were using acronyms during a brief, and somebody said, oh, that's the new CEO. You want to be careful. I said, no, go ahead. I know acronyms. I was in the Navy for 30 years. So a lot of them are similar, and the missions are similar, the mission sets. If you haven't been keeping up with commercials, the U.S. Navy is a global force for good. And there were a lot of humanitarian operations that I was able to participate in there. But coming over to the Red Cross, it was a very operationally focused organization. And the mission we did was similar in terms of how you approached it. So for me, it was a really easy fit. And also, when I was in the Navy, we went through a process where we were functionalizing the bases. My last role was I was privileged to command Naval Air Station Fort Worth Joint Reserve Base, and that was becoming a very matrixed and functionalized organization. Well, unbeknownst to me, while I was leading that change at the base, the Red Cross was going through a very similar change. So I was brought in because I'd had that experience with matrixed functional organizations.
Shows how similar they can be as you're doing it. But the essence of the American Red Cross is volunteers and money coming in for people to contribute. Now, when they contribute money, is it going to the American Red Cross? Is it going to American Red Cross North Texas? How is that distributed?
Okay. Well, it kind of depends, and it depends on what motivates you as a donor. The Red Cross always has and always will honor donor intent. So the idea is, okay, when we approach somebody to contribute to the Red Cross, what are their philanthropic interests and what do they want to do? We like folks to understand that our role is widespread. The Red Cross is now one nationwide enterprise that's operated at very local chapter facilities. So we take the benefits of being standardized and delivering that same level of Red Cross response, no matter where you are in the country. And then we use local volunteers and local leadership to deliver that. So some people will be moved by that and say, oh, I just want my money to make the most impact in people's lives. And we'll put that in disaster relief. And we'll say, write that donation to disaster relief. Others will say, well, I'm very moved by this most recent tragedy. I want to target my money at that specific tragedy. And we will designate that way. However, the disaster relief gifts give us the most flexibility to help by far the most people. So that's what we hope that we can help donors find the right match for their philanthropic interests.
So they can donate generally or specifically depending how they want to do it.
Yes.
You are obviously looking for contributions, volunteers all the time.
Yes.
I guess the term is blue skies as well as gray skies.
Yeah.
Hopefully there aren't as many gray skies out in the future, but what are you doing now as the American Red Cross without a disaster nationally?
This is a great question because most people are used to seeing us in the field in our big boxy trucks rolling in and bringing relief to people in masses when there's a hurricane or a tornado, or as we've recently had a series of tornadoes and floods over about almost 2 months that left us serving about 8,000 families across Texas. So people are used to seeing us in that. What they don't see us in the disaster role, though, happens every day. Right here in the Metroplex, more than 5 families every day need Red Cross assistance because they're burned out of their homes. Single family fires, apartment fires, and when those happen, we roll on them. We're dispatched by the first responders, by the fire department. We have great relationships with the fire departments in the Metroplex. And our teams roll out to provide immediate assistance to those families that need it. So that's a daily happening thing that's not widely known, but to that family that's sitting out on that curb, having lost everything they've got, it's every bit as devastating as any tornado or hurricane is to that single family or multiple families in the case of an apartment fire. In addition to disaster response, we have 4 other lines of service we do. Service to the armed forces, which is something I can definitely sink my teeth into, having done 30 years in the Navy. We do international services where we help reunite people with their families from situations like they've gone through a war, a conflict in their area, and they've become separated. We collect blood, about 40%+ of the nation's blood supply. And we teach preparedness, health, and safety classes. Almost everybody's been through some kind of Red Cross safety class, lifeguarding, swimming, CPR, AED, even babysitting. That's another function that we do. So we're really everywhere. When I go into a room, I love to ask people, okay, how many people have been helped by the Red Cross in some kind of disaster? And a few hands will go up. How many of you have given blood to the Red Cross? And some more hands will go up. How many of you have taken a Red Cross class? And pretty much everybody else's hands go up. So everybody has a Red Cross story in some way. It's a very iconic American organization.
Well, how do you get the word out? How do you now we see some of the ads when there are disasters going on and occasionally when they're not, but how do you get the word out to get the contributions and the volunteers that are to the American Red Cross?
Another great question because, you know, disaster response isn't sexy. People don't think about it all the time. Preparation isn't sexy, but we have great preparedness programs where we're out there educating people on what to do. What to do when there's a tornado warning. What to do when there's a fire. What to do when there's a hurricane that's coming in. What do you do? How do you prepare? Through great programs, pillowcase project for school-age kids, that kind of thing. So we have programs in, as you put it, blue sky times, where we go out and help people become more resilient and more prepared. And those have shown big benefits. Currently, we're going into at-risk neighborhoods, neighborhoods that have a high frequency of home fires, and we're installing smoke detectors in those homes. Nationwide, this has already shown to have saved 13 lives and counting as we move forward with this project. So a lot of work is shoe leather work that our great volunteers go to do in the community. We also try to put the word out through our website. We have a really robust social media presence all over Facebook at Red Cross DFW and Twitter at the same. And so you can find us there, and we have those campaigns because increasingly that's how people get their news and information is on their phone through social media. There's a number of ways you can participate as a Red Cross, or you can volunteer through any of those means. It'll help you find the channel to get there. You can donate. You can be a contributor to the Red Cross, and we can talk about some of those, I think, toward the end. But I'll make a plea for that right now for the volunteers, because here's what happens. There's a disaster coming, or a disaster that has happened, and now everybody wants to help. The real power is in being prepared to help. So if you come to us and you volunteer now, we can train you to become a volunteer of many different ways. We have volunteers that do everything from hand out bottles of water, to run shelters, to drive trucks to homes that are impacted, to government liaison work. The whole spectrum. So help us train you up so you're ready to go and you can be more help to your community when the time comes.
Tell everybody what your website is and tell them the best way they can contribute in addition to volunteering.
Sure. So the website is redcross.org/DFW, specifically for right here in the Dallas-Fort Worth area and the North Texas region. So go there. You can see opportunities to both volunteer, even for employment opportunities within the Red Cross, because some of my team are paid employees, although 96% of my workforce is volunteer. And that's what keeps the Red Cross such a great value to the donor dollar. It's a 91 cents out of every dollar that's spent by the Red Cross is spent on mission programs. And we're able to maintain that partially because of the high volunteer presence. So you can go there and volunteer. You can also click on donate, and it'll take you to a site where you can select which areas you want to donate to support. You can also pick up your smartphone and text Red Cross to 90999. That makes a $10 contribution that shows up on your cell phone bill. And then you can even stroke a check and walk into your local Red Cross chapter and present that. So there's a number of ways you can do it. You can support us. The Red Cross is a large nationwide organization, and a lot of people think that we're associated with the government in some way because we are so large. We've been around for 135 years, and we're everywhere. But the truth is, everything the Red Cross does is solely supported by the generosity of donors. So we really put that out there to make people understand that this is really you contributing to the resilience of your community and your community's ability to bounce back after it's been impacted by a serious disaster. So come on out, join us as a volunteer, sign up to become a donor. We'd love to have you.
I would think there's a tremendous amount of satisfaction, if nothing else, volunteering for the American Red Cross. Tell everybody one more time how they can get a hold of you locally.
Okay, redcross.org/DFW. We'll give all the information they need to be able to contact us. It's got our phone numbers. It's got email addresses, so you'll be able to log in there. And it gives you an opportunity to sign up directly there as a volunteer or a donor. So by far, that's the best way to get a hold of us and become part of the American Red Cross here. As you said, Steve, it is an incredibly enriching experience when you can be the deliverer of hope to a family that's lost everything.
That's fantastic when you can have that happen. Well, TD, thank you very much for being a part of Playmakers Talk Show.
Great to be here. Thanks, Steve.
TD Smyer is the CEO of the American Red Cross North Texas Region. This has been a terrific show. Thank you to our guests. Join us at PlaymakersTalkShow.com where you can get all of our replays and past episodes. That's PlaymakersTalkShow.com, and we're going to be back next week with more Playmakers. See you then.
You've been listening to Playmakers Talk Show with Steve Klein. Join him again next Friday at 3 p.m. for another sit-down with DFW's most interesting playmakers.